Greg Papa coming up in an hour, four down territory, 7:17. From the 916, hi, Katie. I know this is a big deal, but could I have your tickets for the Cavaliers game from Alan?
You may be able to win them on Twitter because I generally give them away on Twitter, I would say 95% of the time.
Give away the Cavs tickets?
I give away most tickets.
LeBron's probably going to rest. Has anybody looked to see, by the way, if they're on a back-to-back or anything? The Cavs? I wonder if the Cavs are on a back-to-back. Kings were not on a back-to-back. Denver was. They win 120-113. The Kings do, that is. DeMarcus Cousins, 31 points, 6 boards, 6 assists.
Light work for him.
Darren Collison, 26 points. And Aaron Aflalo with 19 points off the bench. Hopefully,
he two shots last night.
That's a big deal. Hopefully he can follow it up tonight.
Don't clap for yourself.
I didn't. That was a live studio audience.
Embarrassing.
Shut up. Michael Malone was not happy. Our old friend Michael Malone, not happy at all after the game at his team. He was
at his team.
Yeah, he was. Well, let's let him tell you.
I love him so
much. The worst.
When I read the transcript of this, and I'm sure you've got more audio to come, but when I read the transcript of this, it's like, oh my God, I've heard this a million times, or for at least, I don't know, 80 some odd times.
Yes. It's fantastic.
He coached 106 games.
So, at least 80.
Yeah.
He was not happy.
Beginning of year two, the defense was actually pretty nice.
He was not happy at all, and that's understandable.
I was in the locker room getting post-game sound from the players, and my camera guy was just like, he had his headset on so he could hear everything that was going on during the interview. He's like, oh, my God. Actually, he could hear what he was saying to his players in the locker room, and he was his face was just like, he made this horrible face. I was like, what's going on? He goes, oh, my God. Malone is just obliterating his players right now.
He's not happy.
It's
a very challenging year for old Coach Malone. Speaking of you getting sound from players, here's Aaron Aflalo.
I'm going to make a rule.
Well, you got to tell him what to talk about.
I'm going
to
make a rule that you cannot use any of my sound from the sideline job on the show. I don't like hearing myself. Stop. My goal in life, though, is to get him to speak.
Who, Aflalo?
Yeah.
Well, you did.
No, I mean, that is not speaking. He was so short. And so that's the thing is, like, I give him a hard time all the time. I see him. He's one of those very, very silent guys that doesn't say much anyway. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't like being in this situation to have to talk. And so it's like, I just want to make you laugh, open up a little bit, have a little fun with it. You just got to win at your old, you know,
if you're
team.
Playing a game of make me laugh between Aaron Aflalo and Costa
I did it to Costa Kufis.
There we go.
I did it to Costa.
You got Costa
like,
to laugh.
I had a walk-off interview with him. I believe it was in Memphis. And again, something happened with our audio, but no one then was thinking like, oh, they're censoring him. So I got one question and then we had to let him go. So I did the interview again in the locker room post-game. And he knows that he's not. He does this on purpose. He doesn't want to be interviewed.
No.
So he gives stock answers every single time.
Well,
so I said, not only am I going to get you to expound on things and actually not say your stock answers, I said, I'm going to get you to laugh. We start the interview, and he starts with his stock answer, and then he starts laughing. He goes, okay, all right, okay. And then he goes back to it.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay,
he is a funny guy.
I have to have a little fun with it.
Maybe Aaron Aflalo just doesn't like you.
Oh,
it's possible.
Maybe he thinks you're weird, Katie.
Right?
Yeah. It's not the first time. I actually interviewed him when I was working with the Suns in Phoenix. I think he was in Denver, had a big game.
Yeah.
Beat the Suns. Interviewed him in a walk-off. That was like years ago.
That go well?
He was a little bit more talkative then, to be honest.
DeMarcus Cousins is talkative at times. He spoke last night on the homestand coming up. You know, there's another clip from DeMarcus and Darren Collison, who we'll have later on the week as well. You hear the players already talking about they're aware they're in the eight seed. They're very aware of it. And that's something that's talked about. I know DeMarcus Cousins is obsessed with making the playoffs. And at 7:30, we're going to get into the Kings a little bit more deeply. Deeply? Deeper.
Deeperly.
And talk about some of this stuff. I will say this. Right now, the Kings, they're a full game ahead of the Blazers and a game and a half ahead of the Nuggets in the race for the eight spot.
Here's something. Did you know?
Hold on. 15 and 19 are the Kings. Did you know that
here we go.
The Kings are 34 games into the season. Mm-hmm. Dave Yeager's first year with the Memphis Grizzlies through 34 games, his Memphis Grizzlies were exactly the same at 15-19. They ended up 50-32.
I asked him about that last night.
Yeah.
In pregame. He kind of laughed. He's like, yeah, that had a little bit to do with Marc Gasol being injured.
I mean, whatever.
And then, and then
Rudy Gay's injured.
But the point is, it's the time of the season when you're under a new head coach and a new coaching staff entirely, that it's this point in the season where you really do start to settle in and you figured some things out and your chemistry is building. So this is an important time for the Kings. And this homestand is important because they've been on the road so much and they've been able to build some momentum on the road, which is difficult. So I want to see it continue at home, despite the fact that they have a tough schedule. And tonight's game, it is a must win because this is a Miami team that they went on the road in the very beginning of the season. They lost them and they're extremely depleted now. This is not a team that should even come close to competing with the Kings right now.
No, this should be an easy win. You hate saying that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it is. This is an easy win for every team in the league, and if the Kings blow it, they're going to hate themselves. And we're going to hate them, too. It'll be a real fun show tomorrow.
Kings are 8-12 on the road. Last year, they had 15 wins on the road all year. So they're more than halfway to where they were last year.
Portland was also in the same spot in the standings this time last year that they are now.
Yeah.
They gained a lot of momentum. It was January when they started their push. Now, I don't know if they're going to be able to do the same thing this year because their defense,
I don't think they're as good of a team this year.
I don't think they are either. No. Their defense is such a problem for them. And if you can't stop teams, forget the fact that last year they actually played well in the playoffs, mm-hmm. but say they got to the playoffs and got that 8th spot, which I think would be a miracle at this point, just having watched them play so much up to this point, they're going to get annihilated in the first round.
Hey, how do we determine who gets the good I'm playing against my former team karma? Because isn't Mike Malone 0 of his last 4 against the Kings?
Mike Malone has yet to beat the Kings.
Yet to beat the Kings.
As a head coach.
And, I mean, it's the Aaron Aflalo narrative's fun. Hey, you count on a guy to light up his former team. Well,
it can go one of two ways.
Yeah, I mean, worked for the Kings last night.
Meanwhile, Rudy Gay did not play again last night. I thought James Hamm
missed 9 of the last 10 games.
Hamm made some good points on the postgame talking about saying there's just no way Rudy comes back if he's not 100% for two reasons. Either A, he's going to finish the year and he's going to be the Kings 3 forward, and that's a big deal, or B, they're going to trade him, and they can't trade him if he's hurt. Mm-hmm. So you got to make sure that he's healthy, good, and ready to go. What's encouraging is that they have proven, I'm not on the whole they're better without Rudy Gay bandwagon, but they've proven they can win some ball games without Rudy Gay.
Quite possibly more than they do with him.
So what's interesting is, well, what could they get for Rudy Gay? If you're already winning without him, if you can bring something in to augment and supplement this team in a positive way, well, now you're cooking with bacon all of a sudden. We'll get into that a lot more. We got a lot of questions when
it
comes
bacon.
To the Kings. I do too. Not turkey bacon, though. Turkey bacon's
That's
gross.
Not bacon.
It's like rubber. We're going to get into this very, very deep at 7:30. A lot of things we take stock on the Kings. We promise we'd be heavy on the Kings today. We were heavy on football yesterday. But we will pause and do a little four-down territory for you next. Greg Papa at 8:05. It's The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK.
The voice of Raiders second-string quarterback Matt McGloin, who will not be playing in the playoffs. Instead, it's going to be Connor Cook. So, guys, is it silly to think that Cook can actually lead the Raiders past Houston?
I don't think it's silly. I think it's hopeful, and I understand that. But this is a kid who had some pretty big games and some pretty big performances at Michigan State. And, of course, that doesn't carry over to the NFL playoffs in your damned first start ever. But it's not – it wouldn't be crazy. They have a great offensive line, the Raiders do. Mm-hmm. They have some veteran receivers and Amari Cooper. If the running game is there – it's going to help him a ton, and the defense needs to step up. I wouldn't be shocked if we're sitting here Monday talking about the Raiders eking out a win behind Connor Cook.
It would be nice to I don't know really what to expect from this, because when you have your third string quarterback starting a, you know, playoff game for you, there's no telling what's going to happen. The sad thing is that the Raiders gained so much momentum and they're in the playoffs, and this is what the storyline is. I'm sure that's not what they want to be talking about, but God only knows what could happen from here.
Guys, I'm going to call him the judge on this one.
Oh.
He says, Not silly.
Not silly.
Because the Texans suck, too, and their quarterback situation stinks. And if you want to think about it this way, how much money did Brock Osweiler, was it $70 million in the offseason?
32 guaranteed.
Okay, so think about this for a second. If someone were to tell you, you've got $70 million to pony up for a quarterback, and you got to choose between Connor Cook and Brock Osweiler.
Great point.
That's way too close of a decision. That's way too close for a guy that already has a $70 million contract. So, no, not crazy. I think it can be done.
And coming up at 8 o'clock, I'll tell you why Brock Osweiler is a freaking bargain compared to what ESPN is paying for this Raiders-Texans game. Dear Lord.
That sounds familiar. That's because that's the voice of Matt Barrows, and he was on our show yesterday. Niners are set to interview multiple GMs. Should they go young and hungry or old and proven?
God, that's a tough question because I think, and kind of to what Matt was talking about, we know so much about head coaching candidates in this league, and there's a lot of names like Kyle Shanahan and obviously Josh McDaniels that are coming up a lot in the conversation for head coaches for a lot of different jobs. But when it comes to general managers, you hear names, but you're like, who the heck is that? Oh, he's with the Packers or he's with, you know, the Vikings. There's a lot of different names that are on this list. I don't know who any of these guys are, and we're not really supposed to. So I don't really have an answer in terms of young or proven because I don't know anything about general managers in this league. It's not something we talk about.
So you think they should go old and proven?
No, I think that what they need to do is they need to do an exhaustive search and they need to hire a general manager before they hire a head coach.
Right, but the GM, would you rather see the GM be old and proven with a track record or somebody who's young and up and coming?
I don't think it matters. I just want them to do an exhaustive search.
Okay.
What names are out there that are old and proven? I mean,
well,
there's the guy from the Vikings
that's kind of been in the league for 10 years.
Well, yeah, but I mean, is he proven? You know, I mean, it's not, you know,
Scott McLuhan's
not coming back, okay? Bill Walsh isn't out there,
right?
I mean, I'm going.
John Gruden?
I'm trying
Bill
to.
Bill Cowher?
Well, proven as a GM.
I know.
And what's amazing to me is imagine the kind of jerk Brian Billick must be to not even get a phone call from anyone ever. But that's a whole, that's a whole different point. I want to see someone young that's eager to come in and prove themselves. This is as clean a slate as you're going to see in the NFL. Mm-hmm. You get to choose your quarterback. You get the number two overall pick. You've got almost $90 million in cap space if your owner wants to use it. I want to see someone that's going to come in with fresh fingerprints and say, this is my vision. And if that fails, fine. But don't let Mike Shanahan screw it up.
So you think like Louis Riddick would actually be an option that you would consider?
I actually do. And I don't know what would lead me to that
right.
He's had any sort of success in the past. But I think that's an intriguing candidate. I like his work for the most part on TV.
I mean, he's had front office experience. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of been, and he's a former player. How much does that factor in?
You know, the one you always tend to go to, and I'd be all for it, is Bill Parcells. But he's 75,
right.
And for the last 2 years has served as a consultant for the Cleveland Browns.
How's that going?
True story, by the way. Broke my dad's arm when they were kids. Yeah,
oh, wow.
grew up two doors down.
Seriously?
That's really a true story. Fell down a hill.
Lions Radio Network there on the call. Michael Bennett called Zach Zenner the best white running back in the NFL.
What?
Is that okay?
Well, I don't know. I mean, he's not even averaging 4 yards a carry, and he doesn't have a 100-yard rushing game this season, so I'm not okay with it. But Danny Woodhead's hurt, so on to you, Dave.
I don't know. Like, my whole thing is I don't get bent out of shape about stuff like this often, and I'm not now. I just tend to play the whole why I don't know.
I get bent out of shape on stuff like this, just like you get bent out of shape on the whole Kings versus Warrior ticket jersey scenario. This is ridiculous.
Just call him a running back, I guess.
Because that's what he is. Since this is 2017, as Nate figured out earlier in the show, that it's actually the calendar year has changed.
It's true.
Why is that a qualifier? Why is that a qualifier?
I don't know.
Because there's no white running backs.
Right, but what if Peyton Manning was like, wow, that black guy coach is pretty good. He's pretty good. He's a black guy. He's good.
You know about power dynamics, right?
I understand that. Okay. I do.
The same conversation can be made for quarterbacks in this league.
I said that
because
really
it's like, oh, well, Cam Newton is the best black quarterback in this league. This is just a stupid thing to say.
I don't want to get like.
Can we not agree on that?
No, I mean. I don't know. I don't think any of it should be a big deal, but I get it. I'm torn. Like, I don't want to be upset about it because I feel like it's just getting upset to get upset and people get too upset. But
it's just dumb.
I say he's a good running back. I do like how they used to call Peyton Hillis the Avalanche because he was a big white downhill runner. All right, fourth down. They got on Madden.
People like novelties, man.
They do.
That's the voice of Tom Brady, who might quite possibly be the best quarterback in all of football. Is Tom Brady having the best career for any player in NFL history?
Kind of an outlier question here. I was thinking about it last night. We talk about Tom Brady and look at his stats and what he's doing and how old he is and the fact that the Patriots are the favorite to win the Super Bowl again. I think I think we talk about, is Tom Brady the best quarterback of all time? I think he's the best football player of all time. I think when it's all said and done, he's going to have the best career of any football player ever. The fact that he's making a run this year, I don't know that there's another player that can compare. I don't know there's another football player that has a – you might find somebody who has maybe better – like a running back who has crazy stats, or Jerry White Rice, the wide receiver. But Tom Brady has ball in his hands every single game. He's got, has to get the ball to the Jerry Rices of the world. And Tom Brady has more titles. So I don't know who else would it be.
Jerry Rice.
You think Jerry Rice has had a better career than Tom Brady?
I think Jerry Rice is the best football player that ever lived.
Okay, I mean, well, Tom Brady,
tough to argue,
obviously suspended for the first four games of the season.
Yeah.
They've lost two games. One while he was out, he's lost one. He went 11-1 after coming back.
For what, two picks, I think?
Yeah, 28-2 touchdown to turnover
he's
ratio.
He's like 75 years old.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, he's setting records. And I really had a like conversation in my head last night trying to figure out on the plane, like, how this MVP race is going to end up because Matt Ryan also, when you just look at the stats, is having an impressive season. But then so did Derek Carr. And then now we're seeing what happened to the Raiders after he left. With Tom Brady out, they did pretty damn well. So I don't know. Yes, he's having a historic year, but I don't know if he's the MVP. I'm really torn over this, guys.
We were talking about best player of all time, though. Not MVP.
I don't.
You're bringing it down to the year. I'm saying ever.
See, I'm going to spin everything that you said about Tom Brady, about him having the ball in his hands. I'm going to spin that back on you because Jerry Rice had the degree of difficulty of not having the ball in his hands on every play. And he still was a league MVP as a wide receiver, man.
Yeah,
and that was without the benefit of all of the rules being in favor of him being able to catch
the
ball.
Yeah.
And it's tough for me to argue against Jerry. I will say this, though. Jerry spent 98% of his career catching balls from two Hall of Famers.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Jerry Rice is Larry Fitzgerald.
Or two Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
Spent
yeah,
their entire
right.
careers throwing the ball to the best football
sure.
player that ever lived.
But that brings up the fun conversation.
Look at you guys.
Larry Fitzgerald. It's a chicken and egg. If Larry Fitzgerald played for the 49ers and Jerry Rice played his career for the Arizona Cardinals, are we still having these conversations?
Would they both be Hall of Famers?
conversation, though, you can look at it, too. Look at Drew Brees. He is, like, historically one of the best players ever, one of the best quarterbacks.
Sure.
He's got to be in that conversation. But look at his success. Yeah, they won a Super Bowl. But right now, even though he's still putting up historic numbers, they can't win.
It's
the, you know, wide receiver quarterback conversation, which is more valuable.
That's why I give the edge to Brady. I just give the edge to Brady because when you combine it all, when you combine titles, numbers, longevity, everything, wife, movies,
wife.
Entourage.
Did you say wife?
Yeah, all the whole package.
God, you're just ability to be a complete tool just never
kids.
Ceases to
illegitimate
amaze me.
Kids.
Oh, and the time that he refused to meet the president because of family reasons.
Wife.
God,
I love
keep coming back to that.
Tom Brady. Are you familiar with with the stat approximate value?
Yes.
It's basically like they're similar to war in football.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's, you know, a bunch of convoluted bull crap. But here's your top seven all time, according to Football Reference. Peyton Manning, number one. Brett Favre, Jerry Rice, Fran Tarkenton, of all people. Reggie White, Bruce Smith, Ray Lewis, and Tom Brady. I mean, that's a pretty good collection of.
Yeah, well, you know, we could probably find an analytic, too, that says Tom Brady is like the ninth best quarterback of all time.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. You know.
And well, just to speak of that, Peyton Manning kind of whoops everyone on that.
Yeah,
stat.
He is pretty good. We'll take a break when we come back. Hey, let's get back into these Kings, including why the Sacramento Kings maybe shouldn't make the playoffs this year and what their what that means for their draft picks. It's a catch 22, kids. It's a drive. Sports 1140 KHDK. Greg Papa at 8:05 to talk Oakland Raiders. Ken Rudolph back with his news. We think we got him connected today. That's going to be at 8:30. Want to remind you, Four Down Territory brought to you by Jersey Mike's. Two Sacramento area locations, 624 Watt Avenue in the Arden Town Center and Fulton Marconi in the Town and Country Village. Hey, you need food for an upcoming party? Jersey Mike's caters. Choose from a variety of subs, salads, and fresh made cookies. Dave, Katie, and Nate back together for the first time in 18 days, all in the same room with your phone calls at 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. We're going to talk Kings in this segment, but we did finish the last segment. Last question of four down territory was, is Tom Brady not just the best quarterback of all time, but has he put together the best career of any NFL player ever? The always fantastic Ken is on the phone. Hello, Ken. Welcome in.
Hey, folks. Happy New Year.
You too.
Thanks,
buddy.
Ken.
Hey, you know, every time I hear this conversation about the greatest football player of all time, the one thing that's frustrating is everybody always talks about quarterbacks. I think quarterbacks are the most accomplished football players and are actually football conductors, because when you look at the rules have been changed to basically not allow them to be touched where they're protected. I don't even know if you can call them football players. They're football conductors. I think that when you talk about the greatest football players, you should at least look at guys who affected the game where they had to change the game. For instance, Mel Blunt is the reason why the rules changes went into effect where you can't touch wide receivers past 5 yards. He was so good and so great that when he put his hands on you at 6'3", 215 pounds, as a cornerback, you literally couldn't get away from him. They had to change rules. The reason why the one-back offense was put in effect was because they couldn't block Lawrence Taylor. Lawrence Taylor was so great that they effectively changed how you block defensive ends and linebackers, because you could not block Lawrence Taylor one-on-one. It used to be where you had you tried to design an offense where your halfback or fullback would come up and block the on-rushing linebacker. Lawrence Taylor changed all of that. So to me, when you look at football greatness, I think you got to look at guys who affected the game by their mere presence. And to me, you always talk about accomplishment, because quarterbacks are always judged by the numbers, but the greatest players are the guys, to me, that had an impact on the game where the game is altered. And I think that
Ken, you're starting a football team tomorrow, and you can have anybody from the beginning to the end of their career, and you have three guys sitting there on the draft board. You have Mel Blunt, you have Lawrence Taylor, and you have Tom Brady. You telling me you take Blunt and Taylor before Brady?
Lawrence Taylor?
Yeah.
Yes.
You would start a franchise around Lawrence Taylor before Tom Brady?
Yes, because defense wins championships.
Okay.
Ask Phil Simms, man.
I'm asking. I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm asking.
Yeah, you're making an impressive point.
I think that when you take a look at the champions defensively, that's where Pittsburgh started its run defensively. So I think you start with defense.
Well, you could also make the argument, too, if you're staying there. You know, look more recently at the Baltimore Ravens, for example. The Ravens won, what was it, 2000-2001 with that defense, and Trent Dilfer, a quarterback. There are a few examples of teams able to win the entire thing with a defense and with a mediocre, average, at best, quarterback. Dilfer was one. Doug Williams was not a tremendous quarterback for the Washington Redskins. He won a title. There's a few others in there.
So, though, Trent Dilfer beat Kerry Collins.
I want to say, guys, if I
yeah.
can.
Yes.
When you take a look what Brady has accomplished, as great as he has been, I don't know if he's been a consensus all-pro quarterback during his time. Jerry Rice was a consensus all-pro wide receiver at least 10 of his 20 years, and to me, that's the hardest thing to get. To be a consensus all-pro means that you are the best in your position every single year. Tom Brady has had great years, but consistently, could you say he was better one year or the other than Peyton Manning? He's more accomplished than Peyton Manning in terms of champions, but as far as actually putting numbers on the board, he and Peyton are a virtual match. There is no match to Jerry Rice. Thanks a lot, guys. Have
Thank
a great
you, Ken.
Day.
Tom Brady was an all-pro twice. Tom
Can
Brady.
We do like That's an all-pro like caller?
Oh, Ken's, yeah. Tom Brady's an all-pro twice. 2007, 2010, second team all-pro 2005, 12-time pro bowler, but that doesn't really mean much.
Munch.
Three-time Super Bowl MVP, two-time most valuable player. Hey, it's interesting because you also have straight stats, too, and he's right, Peyton Manning.
I mean, I think that was an interesting – I mean, you kind of had a little trap question there, choosing between those three guys, but you do have to think real hard about a guy like Lawrence Taylor. Man, Phil Simms is a Super Bowl champ. Jeff Hostetler is a Super Bowl champ. What?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, what kind of – because of Lawrence Taylor. But every time I think about that, when you think about those Ravens teams or those Bears teams or even the Seahawks who have had so much success, and you think about that one truly dynamic defensive player, I always come back to J.J. Watt. And what the hell has that team done?
Right.
You know,
you have to have a combination. Mm. Can't just be one dude. Mm-hmm. Kings win 120-113. They beat Denver They have the 8 seed by a game, now a game and a half over Denver. We mentioned earlier that the Kings now at 15-19 at exactly the same spot through 34 games that Dave Yeager was his first year with Memphis. Memphis finishing 15-32. It's a goofy stat. People think that that means I assume they're going to finish 15-32.
That's what I took.
I'm just simply
you also have to look at the fact that Memphis had been in the playoffs for the three previous years as well. It's not it's not like Dave Yeager inherited a team that he had to bring from the bottom up into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, on the positive side, we're not expecting 50 wins, but you know, things do happen through the course of a season that cause mediocre to slightly above average teams to look good. You remember a few years ago when the Rockets, I think Tracy McGrady was still playing, but they had something like a 24-game winning streak.
Yeah.
And they weren't really a title contender, but when you do something like that, people start thinking you can't be beat. And I'm not predicting a 20-game win streak for the Kings.
That's but if what you makes keep winning, the playoffs interesting.
Yeah,
if you keep winning, it's a 7-game series.
Right, if you keep winning 6 out of 9, we're going to look up a few weeks from now and be like, whoa, damn, what happened? We got a good team now.
Only 4 games under 500. But here's a question, though. And I've wavered on this, guys. I've been steadfast on one side, and I've kind of wavered on this recently. But the question should be asked, should the franchise outlook and goal be to make the playoffs this year? Is that what they should do? And I know that seems like an obvious question to some people on the surface. Of course you want to make the playoffs. But here's a little bit of it. If the Kings make the playoffs, I think we can all agree it's not exactly a given they're going to in the first place. In fact, I think most people would bet that they won't by the end of the year. I think if we took a poll, most people, but maybe I'm wrong. But I think most people would overwhelmingly bet that the Kings will not do any better than the 8 seed. So let's just assume for a second that making the playoffs means they're going to play the Warriors in the first round, and they will most likely get swept, at best win probably 1 game in that series, and they're done. So here's what happens if that happens. So they play the Warriors, they get swept out of the first round, or they get beat in the first round. Keep this in mind. The Kings will then lose their first-round pick this year to the Chicago Bulls. They lose that pick if they're outside of the top 10. Now, that affects their pick with the Philadelphia 76ers in a very interesting way. Now, the Sixers can still swap picks with the Kings this year if for some reason they were to win the lottery or the Sixers were to finish ahead of them. But they also have an unprotected pick from the Kings as well that will convey in 2019. And it gets a little convoluted with this year's pick and the Stepien rule and first-round picks, 2 consecutive years, blah, blah, blah. But is it in the Kings' best interest long-term to make the playoffs this year, or do you throw the baby out with the bathwater, not care about that, and say, screw it, it's been over a decade, let's just make the damn playoffs?
Dude, if you're starving and you're a shark and you smell blood in the water, do you wait for a bigger fish?
I'm going to take your analogy. If you're on a desert island and you've been eating coconuts and you got horrible diarrhea, but it's keeping you alive, okay? And you've got a pack of
actually, if you had horrible diarrhea on a desert island, it wouldn't probably keep you alive.
All you're doing is eating coconuts and whatever. All right, forget about diarrhea. All right, so and you've got, let's say, in a cage, you got like 17 baby chicks. All right, do you start pounding the baby chicks, you know, like candy, or do you stick with the coconuts and grow those chicks into chickens?
What are you feeding the chickens?
I don't know.
The way I look at it is this. You're right. The draft situation in terms of picks is extremely convoluted. I'm okay with building through the draft depending on what your situation as a team is. What is this, DeMarcus's 7th year with the team?
Yes.
He is in his prime. His window is closing.
Sure.
And do you want to postpone that and say playoffs not that important this year because we want to make sure we take care of this draft situation that is cleaning up the garbage from past front offices that they put us in this situation?
But as a Kings fan, why do I care about DeMarcus's legacy?
No, it's not about the legacy. It's about, okay, because he is the best center in the league.
Sure.
You want people, if you can make it to the playoffs and prove that with the roster that they have, which is a decent roster, but it's not an impressive roster. If you can make it to the playoffs with this roster and have a coaching situation that is solid and set, and it doesn't, free agents don't look at it and say, not sure, because there's been so much change there. I would take playoffs any day because I think you're more likely to lure higher free agents, guys that want to win now, that can make an impact now instead of saying, oh, we're going to develop for another couple years.
And when you're in that situation, you're not pigeonholed like a team. Like, right. Say, if you look at like the Clippers, for example, two or three seed every year, right? I mean, lock them right in. They've got start, but we know that they're probably not going to beat the Warriors. And when they go into every offseason, they've got such a good, like, say, starting five. Who do you replace in their starting five, right? You're kind of stuck trying to add those Band-Aids at sixth, seventh, eighth man and hoping that's what puts you over the Warriors. If you're a Kings team that finds yourself in an eighth or seventh spot, I think it's a little easier to build from that because you still know that some guys are going to be replaceable. You're not taking as big of a risk as you would be if you're, say, the Clippers or something like that. I mean, I'm trying to spin
positive.
Well,
the Clippers are in a spot, too, where they have so little cap space. Mm-hmm. You know, they've paid these guys, and they probably deserve to be paid. However, it puts them in a situation where they're going to be stuck being, like, the third-best team in the West.
I mean, am I taking it too extreme here, Dave, to say that you're kind of like what you're saying to me is – if you're not going to win the title, or if you're not a clear-cut title contender, then you need to hinky it until you are.
You know what's great about this conversation that we're having right now, and the listeners can't see Dave, which I believe is going to change soon. We're going to have some kind of a...
Yeah, unfortunately.
You're actually listening to and contemplating what we're talking about, because you're really torn. You don't have your mind made up. I can see by the look on your face.
I don't. And now my mind has normally been, if you're not on track for a championship, then I don't care if you... I remember when the Kings were making the playoffs every year for that minute back in the early 2000s. I remember they lost I think to the Sonics in the second round. I'm going, this is pointless. Now we're going to sign Mikey Moore after we signed Sharif Abdul-Rahim when Jeff Petrie had a mid-level exception signing every single freaking year. And the Kings were in that spot where they were just trying to hold on to the 6, 7, or 8 seed. And that's the worst spot you want to be in. But I don't think it is the worst spot. I think the worst spot to be in is the 9 through the 16. and so I have always had the mindset I would rather suck now and build to be a title contender with a real shot. But maybe the reality of the situation is nobody has a shot for a few years. It's the Cavs, it's the Warriors, and then after them, it's the Spurs.
Look at how quickly both of those teams rose up. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's kind of the other thing, too, is if you get that chair at the table, you never know what bounce is going to hop your way. All it takes is, I don't know, one guy to blow out his ankle and another guy to decide he wants to retire in Sacramento, and boom.
Derek Carr is a perfect example of how one player can affect the outcome for a team in the playoffs.
And it's a shorter hill to climb from the 8 spot than it is from the 12.
Well, I think you could argue that the Kings are right up there with teams in the league that could be negatively affected by an injury to one player more than any other team.
Well, yeah,
perhaps,
but in this scenario,
league.
The Kings don't have that problem.
Sure, exactly. My problem is this, too. I have a hard time accepting that this team can be built through free agency just because it never really has been. Mm-hmm. You know, when we look at how that 2002 team was put together, it was a draft of Jason Williams who was traded for Bibby.
It started with Vlade Divac deciding to come here.
Vlade Divac.
It started with him as a free agent.
It's still
the
best free agent this team has had, and Vlade was a mid-level free agent.
And when you look at that, though, I'm curious, does that change anything in that he's the guy that's in that situation? Do you believe he is the guy that can sell free agents on coming here, because he's been there and he bought, he bid on it and they experienced a ton of success?
He hasn't proven that he can yet.
Of course.
Now, maybe part of that's because of the culture and that's not fair to Vlade.
Let's talk to Aaron Aflalo.
Well, it's kind of like, I grew up on a ranch, obviously.
Yeah, you're talking about retreads who, I mean, Ty Lawson was going to have to play in China most likely. And Aaron Aflalo has not exactly had phenomenal relationships with every team he's played for. We're not talking about, and I'm not even saying Kevin Durant, Katie. I'm talking about like your B free agents, not your A. The Kings have never signed. Vlade at best was a B free agent, at best. They've never signed an A free agent. Brad Miller was a sign and trade. That was the closest. Mm-hmm. It's you have to force players to come here. How do you do that? Two ways. Trade. Kings don't have assets to trade. They have one. And draft.
Would you?
Kings can't draft.
But your thing with Vlade,
I'm
like,
think
he
about
hasn't.
How they got Ron? Like, I mean,
how they got Ron Artest?
Yeah, and
they got Ron Artest for Peja Stojakovic.
Yeah, so they gave up Peja. Peja was kind of like, you know, slightly deteriorating at that point. But I guess what I'm thinking is, it doesn't look like they have assets now, but if one guy gets in a fight with a fan, then suddenly he's easier to acquire.
Maybe.
I mean, I don't know. Just maybe. Weird crap happens.
But you're talking about
Chris
Vlade
Weber
hasn't
smokes
proved
weed
it yet.
And ends up on the Kings, you know?
Yeah, but we had Mitch Richmond. That's... Sorry, Katie, go
no,
ahead.
No, 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 I'm done.
No, go ahead.
No, it's kind of the point is past.
Yeah? No, yeah. I feel like your point was good. We just kept interrupting.
No, I'm just saying I understand where you're coming from and the fact that Vlade hasn't proved it yet. He hasn't been here long enough. But it's kind of like, you know, I'm going to use a ranch analogy because this is how my brain works, is if you have a chicken coop and you haven't cleaned it out in a year, it's not going to take you 5 minutes to go in there and shovel out the crap. You're going to be knee deep in it for a while. So that's kind of where Vlade is. It's been a while that it's just been, you know, crap on top of crap. It has to be shoveled out. It's not going to happen in 5 minutes.
Rome wasn't built in a day, that type of thing?
Yeah-ish.
That's fine. As long as you know you're on the right track, as long as you know that you're building towards something. And again, the Kings have DeMarcus Cousins and a bunch of I don't know. So back to the original point, which was they're in the eight seed. This is great. I'm having fun as a Kings fan watching them, at least lately, win more than lose. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to rain on the parade. I'm just honestly asking long term if it's a better idea, especially considering the fact that those draft picks, a stupid Bulls pick is still left over from Omri Caspi.
But how do you grade what Vlade did with the whole Philly trade?
It was a disaster.
Yeah.
It was an unmitigated disaster. And it's still not over yet.
No, it's not.
There's still more that it could get even worse. You potentially could win the lottery, have to give that trade that pick to Philly, and then have to give up an unprotected first round pick to Philly in 2019. Who, by the way, Philly also has an unprotected pick from the Lakers in 2018.
Well, that's what they've been in the business of doing
sure.
for the last 3 years is collecting draft picks.
Man, just win games. I'm just sick of having this conversation. Just win games. Like I'd rather be sitting
you.
Here going, "Hey, what do the Kings need to do to move from being a 45 win team to a 55 win team?" Rather than, "Hey, is it the right move to try to tank out right now?" I mean, this is nonsense.
Yeah,
I want to see them win games, period. I don't care if it's an 8 seed. I don't care if it's a 1 seed. Dude, just make it worth tuning in every other night for crying out loud.
I'm with you.
From the 916, what do you guys think of a Rudy Gay, Darren Collison, Ben McLemore trade for Andrew Wiggins?
I'd love it. I love that
I'd be for it.
Yeah.
I'd honestly rather than grab LeBron from Cleveland. Guys, I agree with you. I think we're all in agreement. I don't know that it's the right way to think, but I do think I've resigned myself to the fact that I would rather have short-term gain.
I think it's because you're damaged. You're a Kings fan that has been damaged.
Yes.
So you don't know which way to think. But I'm with Nate here. Always the best thing is to win in my book.
And
it's to win.
And can't we at least have like a season or two of that before we start clamoring for more?
The damage of losing on a regular basis, which is what this franchise has done for some time now, it's so bad. What it does to the mentality of the players on your roster, to the people in the organization, losing has an effect that lasts longer than what you experience from winning. The joy and excitement and kind of the momentum and just feel of winning is so short-lived compared to losing the same amount of games. It lasts and it sticks with you for so much longer. And they need to get out of that cycle right now.
There is the part of me, though, in the back of my head that's still holding out for what the Sixers are going to be in 5 years.
And I wouldn't be too concerned about that.
And if it full, I know you say that. But if in 4 years, the Kings made the playoffs a couple of times.
Don't worry about it. We're not going to have a job in
they
4 years.
We're going to have a job in 2 years. DeMarcus Cousins has
not
been
if they don't start winning.
Traded for 5 cents on the dollar at best. And the Kings are still languishing. And the Sixers are gunning for a title. Well, that all of a sudden changes that philosophy. And the Sixers right now are sitting there with tremendous assets. Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, who's on the shelf.
They're really, really good, Dave. You want to know how good they are?
Stinks,
you want to know how good they are?
They're 24.
They're 9-24 right now. That's how good they are.
I understand that.
Yeah.
I'd still trade rosters straight across with them in a heartbeat. I wouldn't even think about it. Plus their picks, plus their position, that's where I'm torn. That's where I'm absolutely torn.
Grass is always greener, man.
They have the number one pick on the shelf in Ben Simmons. They're going to have another high lottery pick again this year. They're going to have the Lakers' first-round pick the following year, and they're going to have the Kings' first-round pick the following year, in addition to their own picks, and those Lakers and Kings picks are unprotected. If they go 50-50 on those, they're going to have a core of Simmons, Embiid, whoever the hell they get out of Noel.
Grass is always greener, and no matter what, matter what side, it's going to end up coming out of some cow's rear end. So
it's not like we're sitting on a beautiful lawn right now, folks. I mean, it's not like we're on a golf course.
You know what? The lawn is starting to get green, though.
No, there's definitely,
it's like the drought is starting to end.
There's like a
how many different metaphors and platitudes can we use in this segment? Chicken crap. Like, let's just go down the whole line.
Going farmy. Greg Papa's next. We'll switch gears.
Farmy.
Talk about the Raiders and also tell you why the worst buy in sports is this weekend's Raiders Texans game for ESPN. My God, they're taking a bath. We'll take a break. It's a drive. Sports 1140 KHDK.